Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's May the 2nd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities. Later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, the New York Times is putting the screws to the FDA's food inspection program. A House committee on risk management says the crop insurance program is not doing the job yet. And the BNSF Railway says it will not haul AgriSure corn from Syngenta. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with full details of these and other stories. And then I'll take you through the Illinois FBFM records. You can make those stats tell you which crop is the better bet to plant. Oh, and Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City is away today, so we've convinced the folks at Chesapeake Energy to join us instead. They didn't manage to make it on Monday, so they've got one to make up. They'll do that this afternoon when we talk to them about the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and around the globe. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the wheat pit, a loss of 9 cents, down 9 at $4.79.5 for the May contract. July futures at $5.93.5 were off 7.5 for the day. May corn futures up 4.5 cents at $3.72 on their settlement. July at $3.82, up 4.5, and September's 3.5 cents higher at $3.80.75. December futures at $3.80.25 were up 1.75 for the day in the corn pit. That, of course, your harvest month for the new crop December futures. Soybeans in May, May down 7 cents at $7.34.25 for the beans. July at $7.48.5, they were down 7.75. And August contract down 5.75 at $7.55.75. November soybeans, $7.77. They were off 6.5 cents this afternoon. May bean meal down 2.20 at $195.90. May bean oil at $33.07, and that's off 32 for the afternoon. Feeder cattle May contract 7.5 cents lower at $109.67.5. June live cattle at $93.85 a hundredweight. They were off 2.5 cents today. And the August contract down 15 cents. That finished at $92.57.5. The outside markets, crude oil trading the June crude at $63.80 a barrel, down 60 cents at this hour. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 87 points higher now at 13,222. Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon by phone to take a look at what's happening in the world of agriculture and the futures market is not Paul Cooley today. He's away this afternoon. And Mike Zuzulo has cautiously, and graciously as well, decided to join us by phone from his offices at Risk Management in West Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, and we appreciate you being with us this afternoon, Mike.
Thanks for having us, Todd.
Let's talk about this marketplace. An interesting one. I want you to talk maybe a little bit about volume and the volume of trade over the past couple of days and whether there's been much of it and if this tells you anything about the marketplace at all.
There has at times. It seems like the opening bell and the closing bell in a more traditional manner in the summertime or early summer and midsummer that you usually have a lot of volume centered around the opening bell and the closing bell, and then you get a spike in volume right after the noon weather maps come out. That seems to be the track we've taken here the last week or two. I think, generally speaking, without being able to put any hard numbers on it, but from what we can tell by the rhetoric up in Chicago and the price ticks, the volume has gotten lower and lower and lower, in corn especially, as the confidence in the weather models and the disagreement between private weather forecasters has increased, so less people are willing to take a chance in corn. It seems as though the volume in wheat has peaked here with the Easter holiday freeze and now it's started to go down a little bit. I think it has been shooting up a little bit here in the last few days as more negative mindset has come back into the market. Certainly with the July KC wheat going below $5 here a couple days ago and then giving itself some room, you know, we're now almost 15 cents off that level now in Kansas City, that volume in Kansas City has started to go up quite a bit. Minneapolis is typically a very low volume complex and exchange, but I did take note from one of our contacts in Chicago a couple days ago that Minneapolis had a spike a few days back when it seemed like the market started to turn back lower.
From the corn pit, if volume is edging down and at the lower level except for on the open end of the close, can you infer anything about the move higher over the past couple of days?
No, except I've heard a lot in the last few months about how big the open interest is in the index traders' portfolio on the Commitment of Traders report. And when I look at percentage-wise, people are right when they say the index traders are big in corn. They're net long over 346,000 contracts of futures and options combined. But when you look at percentage of open interest, they're actually less than 20% after Friday's report, compared to almost 25% net long in the open interest in beans, futures and options. And so I think there's a little bit of a misnomer there that, yes, certainly they're very heavy in absolute contract numbers, and that may go back to your volume question, as it seems like that's kind of shaking itself out and the index people are in it for the long haul is how I would derive that they have cut their open interest position down below 20%. They're not in deep water at all as far as, you know, being something coming out from under them and taking them under the water. They're very light in terms of percentage open interest.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Glenn Ring suggested that they would be vacating the commodities at some point. I don't suppose this is the beginning of that, or maybe you have a different opinion.
Well, we have tried to, over the last 9 months, try to put down some hard analysis that would say if you use interest rates, dollar, energy prices, and relative growth as measured by both government reports and the inflows of money into emerging markets, which are heavily commodity weighted, if you look at those main four factors as real key leading indicators as far as general asset and investment flows, it would make sense that they would be the top four things you'd watch. Right now, those are all on our side to keep commodity investment high. Does that mean that there won't be some people juggling around and repositioning out? Certainly there will be. I think maybe the credence that I would give Glenn's comments would be when it comes to the psychological mindset of corn-blended ethanol, much like we talked about Friday afternoon, that's probably the fund traders or the speculative interests that have left the market thinking that that's now a thing of the past. But we hope that that's not a very big influx, or wasn't a very big influx of money, that it was a relatively small amount. So that's kind of where we stand on that it's not time. In fact, a Bloomberg friend of mine sent me a Newswire story that broke Monday about Goldman Sachs, their head global commodity analyst in London, at a conference saying that corn is headed towards $5 between now and 2009. When you have people like that saying that in public and in you know, the big media events like they had in London, I think it's safe to say certainly there's still a large regiment of investors that still like commodities.
Let's talk about the number of acres that might be in the ground or being put in the ground at this point, total number of acres. I had an interesting conversation I'll share with you now with Emerson Nafziger this morning, and we'll produce some normal sorts of feature radio programs out of it in just a bit. And Emerson wanted to tweak me a little along with the industry. And one of the first things he came out with is that if you had taken the percentage planted and then you rounded it up so that you got to the April 30th date and compared it to last year, he was looking at numbers on for Illinois on an average for the state of 145 bushels to the acre, which is fairly shocking. he suggested that would be the case. I don't think he believes that. But here's an interesting number. He roughly said that you lose one bushel a day for every day in May you go before planting date. So the first 10 days you lose a bushel a day. Actually, it's more than that. The first 10 days you lose a bushel a day. The second 10 days, the 10th or the 20th, you lose 2 bushels a day. And the last 10 days. I think he told me you lose 3 bushels a day is the way he wanted to look at it.
Uh-huh.
So you can you start thinking about that. If you get to the 10th of May and you've got, let's make it easy, 1,000 acres of corn, that's a lot of bushels.
Well,
10 bushels a day, that's 10,000 bushel.
Yeah, and between that and some of the rhetorical comments from producers that are saying you're not getting a very good seed bed planted right now, we did actually just finish up a special report we sent out this afternoon to the clients and to our media affiliates, which would include you folks too. But we went back 10 years and, you know, trying to take into consideration the technology advancements in both seed and planters and hardware and software. Even going back, you know, to 1996 all the way up to last year, USDA has never given us in a May yield report a yield above 145 bushels unless planting progress by May 1 was over 50% for the U.S. as a whole. And that even goes back as early as 2003 when we were at 29%. They gave us just under 140 bushel yield. 2002, we were at 26%. They gave us just under 138 bushel yield. So even with today's technology, if you can't get over 50% by May 1, USDA, and it makes sense in a way, because what does USDA have to stand on except statistics and historical data along with the planting progress and emergence data? And so that's where we're kind of lining up here with our clients. Don't throw in the towel too much, because the clients and farmers in particular have gotten a little bit more negative this market. We listen to what they have to say. We take them very seriously, but we're saying just hold off until May 11th and this next USDA report, and let's see if USDA doesn't come off that 153 yield or 152.8 yield, because history would say in the last 10 years we've never gone above 145 if we weren't at least 50% planted by May 1.
I think that looks like a good place to stop. What do you think?
Sounds good. Thanks for having us today.
Hey, thank you much for filling in. We sure appreciate it.
Okie doke.
Yep, Mike Zuzulo joins us this afternoon. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, filling in for our regular Wednesday afternoon analyst, Paul Cooley. You can hear Mike again on Friday morning during the opening market report with Dave Dickey and Friday afternoon with me at this time. He's our regular Friday analyst.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. The folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us then. And they're filling in this afternoon for Drew Lerner, who is away today. He's actually traveling, so we're not able to get hold of him this afternoon. Our own Ed Kieser forecast for this afternoon says in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a few showers. A high of 74, the wind out of the northeast to east at 8 to 16 miles an hour tonight. Ed says mostly cloudy, a few showers. The low around 55, the wind from out of the east at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Tomorrow, Ed says cloudy here in Champaign-Urbana with showers likely. The high around 70, the wind out of the east at 8 to 16 miles an hour, then 2. Up next, we'll hear the complete agricultural newscaster, Director of Agricultural Programming here at the radio stations, Dave Dickey, will join us.
In agricultural news, the New York Times is reporting that less than 0.4% of the almost 9 million shipments of food imported into the U.S. last year was inspected by the Food and Drug Administration. The FDA employs just 1,750 food inspectors at ports and domestic food production plants. The House Agriculture Subcommittee on General Farm Commodities and Risk Management held a hearing yesterday to review the crop insurance industry. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the current system is not working, even after premium subsidies were increased in 2000.
We still have not accomplished one of the things that we were trying to, I think, back then, and that is to eliminate the need for these ad hoc disaster programs.
Texas Congressman Randy Neubauer says he's drafting a bill that would offer producers revenue insurance on top of multi-peril insurance. The trigger is when actual yields fall below county average yields.
We need to somehow get crop insurance to the level that it's necessary that we don't have to be going through this political process that we're going through right now for ad hoc disaster programs. While I wasn't here when the 2002 Farm Bill was put in place, many folks thought that that some of the changes that have been made over the years to the crop insurance program was going to eliminate that, and obviously that proved not to be true.
Peterson says if USDA wants its ideas on crop insurance considered, it needs to act quickly to meet a tight farm bill writing schedule. BNSF Railway yesterday announced it will not haul any GMO corn with AgriSure RW. The GMO corn produced by Syngenta is not approved by Japan or other export markets. For domestic use, the corn must be segregated from all other corn, including use as a feedstock for ethanol that produces distiller's grain. Syngenta officials maintain the quantity of AgriSure RW is manageable for the 2007 planting season. Archer Daniels Midland says third quarter earnings rose by 4.3%, but the increase did not meet expectations and shares of ADM stock fell by 6%. In the latest quarter, ADM net earnings were $363 million. A year earlier, net earnings for the quarter were $348 million. Wall Street investors were expecting net earnings of $403 million. ADM officials say net earnings were up on lower operating costs and better prices for starch, sweeteners, and ethanol, but increases in corn costs tempered gains. Officials from USDA and FDA yesterday updated investigative efforts into tainted feed fed to Indiana chickens. The government says at least 30 poultry farms in Indiana received contaminated wheat gluten from China and then fed it to their animals. Those farms have since processed the chickens and the meat has entered the human food supply. Federal officials say chances are very low that humans will become sick from eating the contaminated chicken meat. Investigations are ongoing. Kenneth Peterson is with USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service.
One of the things we're trying to be careful about is not go out with information that we haven't confirmed, especially with regard to the states. It's important that this is a very broad, ongoing, complex, multi-pronged investigations, and we don't want to go out with information until we're sure that it's accurate.
USDA and FDA officials say it's likely that additional farms received the contaminated feed. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. It's willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter and our podcast. And if you'd like to listen directly to a few MP3 files right off the website, you can do that. Try it on broadband. There are dial-up files there as well if you'd like to listen on your phone line. Pretty tough to do, but it's possible. We try to serve you as best we can while you're out there in rural America. It's all at willag.org. Well, up next, you know the numbers are telling farmers to plant corn this spring. I've got a quick analysis of the five-year trend across the state of Illinois and how the ratios are leaning towards corn as well. Records from the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association clearly point to the economic advantages of planting corn this season. Dale Latz has plowed through the FBFM numbers and has this analysis.
One of the things that's interesting that one can look at these figures, we are in an era right now, we are seeing more shifting in some of our acres from corn to soybeans, and conventional wisdom out there and figures would bear that out for the most part, that corn's been a little more profitable than soybeans. We can use these figures to kind of analyze that from a cost of production standpoint. If we look at the last five-year average and look at our cost ratio of raising a bushel of soybeans to corn, that's averaged about 2.66 times, or it costs about 2.66 times to raise a bushel of soybeans as it does for corn. $7.02 compared to $2.64.
So the University of Illinois ag economist says if today's price ratio is above 2.66 to 1, then it favors soybeans. If it's below it, then it favors corn. On the day this interview was taped, the soybean divided by corn Central Illinois cash price ratio was 2.08.
So that would favor corn production compared to soybeans. So the shifting that's going on, it kind of bears that out of what we're looking at in terms of looking at the cost-price ratio and the prices being offered for corn and soybeans and seeing some of that shift to more corn. If we look regionally, in terms of the cost, again, to raise corn and soybeans in that ratio, Northern Illinois would have the highest ratio where it would cost them higher to raise a bushel of soybeans than corn compared to other areas of the state. Southern Illinois would be the lowest. And again, as we think about where the shifting is occurring, we're probably seeing more in the northern and central part as far as more corn acres and less in southern Illinois. And I think the economics would kind of bear that out, that that's the right direction we ought to be looking at.
USDA predicts farmers around the nation have yielded to a similar price ratio and are now attempting to put an extra 12 million acres of corn into the ground. The agency will release its next acreage report at the end of this quarter. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. We're joined on this Wednesday afternoon by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Farmers, I bet, are in the field, aren't they?
Well, the clay ground has hardly been touched. I mean, we are just extremely wet here. There's still water standing in the fields east and south of here, but on the sand ground and some of the loamier ground, I'd say we're probably maybe 50 to 75% done in corn, but we've still got a long way to go around here, Todd.
Indeed, and I was out in the noon hour this afternoon. There were a few planters rolling here in Champaign County, and by tomorrow they'll be rolling pretty heavily if we don't get more rainfall at some point. But I don't think farmers are particularly worried just yet that they're really doing much damage to the corn crop, are they?
Not particularly, but it just seems to be the same places that we had this problem last year. So there's a lot of concern over there because they just didn't have very good yields last year at all. They were late getting it in. It was wet, and they like to never got it out, and it's the same situation over there this time. And there's a lot of bushels growing east of here, so, you know, there's a little bit of concern over there, but other than that, we've been raining here off and on all day, Todd. So right in here, we're pretty rainy, and they're calling for rain. Now they've extended that through Saturday. So there's no doubt we are going to be behind when it's all said and done.
Well, I can tell you that the hearts of all the farmers around the nation go out to those folks that can't get their crop in the ground. They know how it is. And when you have to mud it out the following fall, that's even worse. If you can't get it in and then can't get it out, that's a tough deal. But it's probably good on the cash basis. How's that holding up?
Basis levels are continuing to improve as the farmers at least try and get in the field because there's just hardly any movement anywhere in this area. We've probably improved corn about a nickel since you and I talked last week.
Mm-hmm.
Bean basis is also about 5 to 7 cents better. So, yeah, we've gained 40 cents back in the cash bean price, and that's pulled a little bit of beans out. They were concerned about, you know, the bean price going away. Now that we're back up over 7, we are buying a few beans.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is $3.58, cash beans $7.09. And new wheat is $4.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Thousands of people rallied today at the Illinois State Capitol to demand more money for education. They say state officials have spent years talking about improving Illinois schools, and now it's time for action. The chief of the Chicago Public Schools, Arne Duncan, complained that some schools get plenty of money and others scrape by. He says schools are, in his words, fundamentally separate and fundamentally unequal. But the protesters were vague about how Illinois should come up with more money for schools. Most speakers avoided any mention of Governor Blagojevich's plan for billions of dollars in new business taxes. They didn't endorse an income tax increase either. The chairman of the Indiana Senate Tax Committee says residents there could get some property tax relief if their counties raise local income taxes. Most homeowners in Indiana are expected to pay more in property taxes this year. The legislature provided some short-term help and gave counties the option to increase income taxes beginning next year to reduce their reliance on property taxes. Tax Chairman Luke Kenley says that would help, but not everyone's satisfied. House Republicans wanted to provide more direct property tax relief this year and next than was approved by the General Assembly. And the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns predicts that many counties will stick with property tax increases next year instead of higher income taxes. Three community colleges in central Illinois will split $300,000 in workforce training grants. Parkland College in Champaign is part of the Heart of Illinois Regional Consortium, along with Bloomington's Heartland Community College and Peoria's Illinois Central College. The Blagojevich administration is giving the three money to train more than 3,000 workers at 182 small and medium-sized businesses. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office says Walmart is voluntarily recalling some baby bibs because they tested positive for high levels of lead. The bib sets were sold under the Baby Connection brand name and came with embroidered prints or images of Sesame Street characters. It's the start of Hepatitis Awareness Month. Dr. Terry Mason of Chicago's Department of Public Health says Hepatitis C is a serious disease, but it can be prevented through education and screening. Mason says the first step is making sure everyone's aware of the disease. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined on this Wednesday afternoon by John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, John.
Hey, Todd. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. Glad to have you on the phone today.
Thank you.
Hey, tell me about the weather here in the Midwest. I hear there's a little rain to the south of us. Not quite here yet, though.
No, well, it looks like over the next couple of days that rain is going to stay across the southern Midwest, primarily on a line from eastern Kansas through Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and southern Ohio. So it really is kind of an Ohio Valley type of an event here over the next couple of days. And then during the couple of days after that, a little bit of scattered shower activity, almost kind of air mass variety activity across numerous areas of the belt. But at least from now until Sunday, we don't really see anything terribly widespread, and only about one quarter of the belt will tend to get any kind of rainfall over the next 4 or 5 days. And again, most of that will be across the southern belt, where corn planting at least is pretty much close to complete.
Yeah, and so those last 25% or 30% in the southern part of the state and in Indiana as well won't quite go in the ground. Central Illinois is moving again. I was out at noon, saw a few planters there, but northern Illinois still awfully wet. Will they be drying out enough to put planters on the fields?
Oh, absolutely, and they're pretty much dry in northern Illinois, not only through the weekend, but also into the early portion of next week. So they have a pretty good window here across northern Illinois.
And Iowa?
Iowa looks like after a little bit of activity here late Friday and Friday night across Iowa, but that looks very isolated. The next main event for Iowa will be coming up as we go into the early portion of next week, primarily on Monday and Tuesday, and that looks like a relatively widespread rain event across Iowa. But again, between now and then, they have little, if any, rainfall across the region, so certainly they'll see some pretty good operations here the next 4 or 5 days before they have another round of delays early on next week.
You really think that'll be the case? It seems to me that they've had an awful lot of rain, and that fingertip that just sort of went across to Iowa and into northern Illinois put an awful lot of moisture in the ground. Has there been enough evaporation to, in the topsoil to get things moving without getting tractors really stuck?
Everyone that we've talked to today is back in the fields across all of Iowa and the northern portion of Illinois. In fact, there's no one that we've kind of talked to and the people that we talk to out and about that are not in the fields here as of today.
Well, I stand corrected in that case.
Just my opinion, Todd.
Well, you're the weatherman. I'm not. And you talk to folks across Iowa, so if they say they're moving, they're moving.
And again, in Iowa, remember that their rains ended midday last Thursday. So they've had basically a week of dry weather. Of course, it's been very warm up in the 80s and lower 90s and very windy across the region, too. If it would have been cool and cloudy, they still wouldn't be back in a lot of areas. But they've had a week of warm, windy, dry weather with generally low dew points, good evaporation rates. So that's why they're back in here right now.
All right. We thank you for joining us this afternoon, John.
My pleasure, Todd.
Hey, John Davis is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He usually joins us here, Mark Russo, one of the two from that office, on Monday afternoons, graciously filling in for Drew Lerner, who's away today on this Wednesday. And that is the Closing Market Report. We appreciate you being along for the ride. If you want to pick it up again, you can do that off our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. In fact, you'll find not only the Closing Market Report, you'll see Commodity Week there, the pre-opening and the opening market reports too, along with the midday analysis with Sue Martin. It's all at willag.org. Have a great afternoon. If you're in the field, take a nap. We'll be good for you. I'm Todd Gleason.